Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, a very special guest, first time on our show, is Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado.
Thank
Welcome
you.
Welcome to Reaching Out.
Good to be here, man. Thanks for the opportunity to connect.
Now, you were born and raised in Schenectady. Your parents worked in General Electric. You attended Colgate University, where you graduated with honors and earned a Rhodes Scholarship to Oxford, England. And from there, you went on to Harvard Law School. You met your wife, Lacey. You ran for Congress in 2018. You were in Congress. You have a diverse district with congressional district with many views. You were voted the most bipartisan member of Congress among Democrats, and by Common Ground Committee was honored by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And in May 2022, Kathy Hochul named you Lieutenant Governor. And you just won the primary in June. You will be on the ballot in November. And you live in Rhinebeck, and you raise twin sons. So welcome to Reaching Out.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the rundown there of the bio in the background, and excited for the conversation, man.
Thanks. Now, we know about your educational background and work in Congress. Former Governor David Patterson was a recent guest on the show, and he talked about how the lieutenant governor job has become even more important, especially over the last several years, because in the last several years, we had two lieutenant governors go on to becoming governor. How do you think the job has changed, and what would you like to accomplish as lieutenant governor?
Well, I think the most important thing for folks who are listening to understand is that when it comes to leadership, your experiences in life and how you want to lead are determined by those experiences, right? So there's, you mentioned growing up in Schenectady. You know, you mentioned my parents working for General Electric. My parents were working class folks. And so I got to watch them rely on good paying jobs to move us to bigger apartments, you know, to finally buying our first house when I was in high school, to safer neighborhoods, because they were hardworking people who were able to earn a good living, and they were able to pursue the dream and work themselves up into the middle class. And that's what allowed me to then go off to Colgate, to Oxford and law school. And then a couple of things you didn't mention, but I think it's important for folks to know, is after law school, I had two careers. I was a hip hop artist, you know, for about 5 years. My parents were very surprised by that decision, given my educational background, but they supported me. I wanted to use the music to empower people. And then 5 years later, I became a lawyer at a corporate law firm. So very, very different environments, a corporate setting, a music setting. And ultimately, when I decided to run for Congress back in 2018, I thought that my diverse experiences, coming from a working class, you know, family, the educational background, the different professional experiences, it gave me the ability to figure out how to bridge divides, you know, how to connect people beyond differences. And that's why I think I was able to have success in my congressional district, which is a district that Trump actually won. You know, Trump won my district in 2016, but I was able to become the first person of color to represent upstate New York in Congress because my focus was on being effective. My focus was on making sure that everybody is represented, whether you supported me or don't support me. And that means quality of life issues are addressed, whether that's the cost of housing, the cost of healthcare, whether that's supporting education opportunities for our young people, whether it's in trade schools, vocational schools, apprenticeship programs, and of course, supporting labor, supporting our working families, and making sure that collective bargaining is protected. And so when you talk about the role of LG and how I view it, I first and foremost view it through my own personal lens, my own backstory, and all the experiences and all the priorities that I've been able to develop over time. And those priorities start with working families. They start with making sure that we level the playing field for folks who oftentimes are not considered or who are marginalized. And we need to make sure that we are creating more pathways of opportunity for our working families. That to me is how I see the role, is to make sure we're investing our resources in communities that create good paying jobs.
It's the first time I'm hearing that you were a hip hop artist. I'm interested. I got to hear that. It doesn't fit who I see in front of me. So tell me about that, because you put it out there for us.
Well, yeah, and I'm proud of it.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
My experiences define who I am. And, you know, so after law school, instead of going to work at a law firm and you know, make a good amount of money, I decided to follow my heart and to use the music that I believed in culturally to speak to issues of the day that I thought weren't being talked about, specifically about, you know, even how corrupt our political system can be, and how much money there is in the system, and how it's shutting so many people out to the point where, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, people are just tired of this game, because it shouldn't be a game. So I was talking about this kind of stuff in my music, because back then I wasn't as confident in our political system being able to deliver the kind of results that I think it needs to provide for people. So I did that for 5 years out in LA. And it was a tough 5 years. I was not financially successful. You know, I had to, you know, grind it out, have odd end jobs to get by. But I spent a lot of time writing and recording and performing music, particularly on college campuses. And that still informs the work that I do to this day, because to me, it's about empowering people and to make sure that my voice represents the voiceless, you know, that I see the people who go unseen. And being able to communicate that message in my music was a big part of the work that I was doing.
Now tell us about some of your songs. Where can we find them?
You can go online. It's easy to find my music online. You just search hip hop and you write in Delgado, stuff will come up and you'll see. And in fact, when I ran for Congress back in 2018, I was attacked by my opponents, you know, because I was a hip hop artist. And, you know, they were trying to play on stereotypes, if you will, and make me out to be something that I wasn't. And it ended up being a mistake, because people got to know who I am, what I represent, what my mission was in the music, which was to empower people. And ultimately, I was able to succeed despite a very nasty, very negative ad campaign designed to make me out to be a threat to the community that I was trying to represent.
Okay, and your hip-hop name was Delgado, or you had a...
It was A.D. The Voice.
A.D. The Voice, okay.
Yes.
A.D. The Voice. Well, I'm going to check it out. I mean, you know, and I'm surprised you're not on the... and you haven't been asked to come on the beat with Ari Melbourne, because he recites hip-hop all the time. And here you are, an elected official, lieutenant governor of New York State, and the show is here in New York. And your hip hop, you should go on there and exchange lyrics. I mean, I'm surprised. Maybe after we air this show, you'll be asked to go on there.
Well, I've been pretty busy in my role when I was a congressman, getting around the district and connecting with folks on any host of issues, from farming to small business growth, to education, to public safety. And I will tell you, most folks, when I do that work, they're not all that interested, and I agree with them, in my hip hop career. They want to know, how I'm delivering.
Oh no! I know,
like how I'm supporting them. So it's a nice background point, and it certainly helps me in how I think about things as a person. But more important to me is making sure that the people that I connect with on the ground feel like, you know, they understand that I'm fighting for their issues, and whether that's economic opportunity, whether that's more affordable housing or healthcare, whether that's, you know, quality of life issues, public safety, whatever the case might be, you know, that's always going to be my focus. I will say that my background in music has been helpful in terms of connecting with the younger audience.
That's what I'm saying.
There are a lot of young people who, when they hear that about my background, they get more interested in finding out a bit more about me. It's kind of the hook, right? And so once I get them interested, then we can have, you know, a broader conversation.
That was my point. And Ari Melbourne, he always has these references. I said, you would be a good guest there because, one, your vast background, you're both attorneys. You both like hip hop. You both like politics. And I would think the audience would have a very good time watching the two of you go back and forth with hip hop politics, today's what's going on today, working people. I mean, you guys can encompass a whole show with just the two of you. I like to put the two of you together. I don't have the power to do it. I'm trying to do it right now through the radio station to put the two of you together, because I want to see that. I want to hear that conversation too, because I'm interested. I want to sit back and listen to the two of you.
I anticipate that at some point.
Yeah. So if we're talking to, and I know your people are listening, book them on the beat, please. Book Lieutenant Governor. This is the first time I'm meeting him. I'm impressed, and people know that I'm the kind of guy. I'm like, look, I meet people. But when I meet somebody that I really like, I say, hey, I like this person. And I said, you got a lot to offer. Matter of fact, you got my son's attention. So
there you go. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's the point.
He's hip hop. My nephew's a hip hop. I'm a house guy from the 80s. I like house music.
I thought you might say R&B, but I'll go with
that. I like R&B too, but I like the house music. So your roots are basically in upstate New York. What do you say to New York City residents about your understanding of their problems? And I know you do understand the problems, because you're mentioning hip hop. Do you have any suggestions?
Absolutely.
To address hotline issues?
Yeah, and it's not just my background in hip hop. It's I have lived experiences in New York. So, you know, when I came back from LA, I worked in New York City. I lived in New York City and I worked. Our children were born in the city. We spent time out in Brooklyn for a while too. We lived there, you know, and raised our family early on before I moved back home to upstate New York. So I've always felt very connected, as has my wife, to not only upstate, which is where we're both from, but downstate. We see the whole picture. We see how it's all connected. And if you look at my work in Congress, a big part of what I tried to do was create more synergy between upstate and downstate, whether that's in the agricultural space where we can focus on our farmers and make sure that their produce, actually can make its way downstate and you know, meet the high demand for quality food and quality milk. You know, whether it's infrastructure, I was a big proponent of the bipartisan infrastructure bill that would connect with bridges and with highways and with public transit, both upstate and downstate in a more synergistic way. So that's always going to be a focus of mine as Lieutenant Governor, is how do I create an environment where no matter where you live, you feel connected to the agenda of the state. One of the things that I hear a lot when I was in upstate was a lot of people were frustrated because they thought a lot of the attention only went to New York City, only went downstate. And so it's important that when we think about the agenda for the state, we think about it in every region, you know, out to Western New York, you know, to up in Northern, all the way down to the city. It's important that we think collectively about these issues and how we can work together and the different strengths and weaknesses, you know, based on each region. I think that's going to be important. And that to me is where I have the experience and know-how to bring to bear to help deliver, you know, investments in communities, in regions across the state that not only empower those communities and those regions, but empower the whole state.
You mentioned something about upstate, downstate. Mayor Byron Brown, Buffalo, is a Queens native. We went to the same high school. We didn't go at the same time, but we know each other. We went to August Martin High School in Queens. I found that out. And when we met maybe 15 years ago at a Democratic National Convention, we've been friends ever since. And, you know, he sends me a lovely card with he and his wife and son every year. And I was glad he was reelected. He ran some campaign. It was one like Lisa Murkowski ran in Alaska, when he gave everybody stickers in that write-in campaign. Hey, stick this on. Don't have to worry about spelling my name right, getting it wrong. Stick this on, get the vote. And I'm sorry what happened in Buffalo with the tragedy, but it was good that they had a mayor like Byron Brown to usher them through and lead that campaign against the violence. So experience counts.
You know, what he's been able to do during some very turbulent and challenging times, the grace with which he's been able to lead, the dignity, and he commands a certain level of respect. And I think that's important in a moment of crisis, in a moment of tragedy. You know, he was the right person for a very wrong moment, you know, in our country's history. And you want that at the very least. And so excited to keep building with him. You know, we have a lot to do when it comes to gun violence. We have to do more. I think the state is stepping up to try to meet the moment. But it's a challenge. It's not just going to be dealt with at the state level. There needs to be action at the federal level. You know, our kids are scared. You know, they're scared. I have 2 8-year-old boys. You know, when I do get the chance to walk them to school, you know, there's definitely been moments where I've had that thought cross my mind. You know, what am I walking them into? And that should never be a thought for any parent in America. But yet it is. And no one is immune, you know, to that type of tragedy happening or coming upon them or their family at any time. And so it's important for us to put the partisanship aside and just focus on solutions that can really protect our kids and protect our communities.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. Our very special guest is Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado, and we'll talk about gun violence. And you and the governor put together a pretty comprehensive response to the Supreme Court ruling of firearms. So can you tell us about that response?
Yeah, the Supreme Court overturned a long-standing precedent here in New York where, you know, to be able to carry a concealed weapon, you had to show a real need. That allowed us to feel safe when we go into restaurants, when we go into theaters or the subway, whatever the case might be. The notion that somebody can just walk around with a concealed weapon in these spaces where you have, you know, especially in New York City, these dense populations, you want to make sure that you protect against that, you know, to the best of your abilities. This was a real challenge that, you know, the Supreme Court totally disregarded and gutted this law. And it's going to cause more violence. We called an extraordinary session, brought lawmakers back to figure out how we can create pockets of safe zones, areas that, you know, we can say by definition are so sensitive that you still cannot have a concealed weapon on you. And so doing the work with our legislative body, doing the work with our mayors across the state and law enforcement to make sure we get a real sense of, you know, what those areas could be that might survive, you know, judicial scrutiny and make sure that we're able to protect communities and protect individuals from these dynamics. So we were happy to get that done, to put more emphasis on those areas and make sure people still feel protected in those very densely populated areas and go from there. So it's unfortunate, you know, that the law was overturned, especially that it's was such a long-standing law. But we did our best, I think, to move forward and try to course correct where we could.
We all should agree that assault weapons shouldn't be sold to 18-year-olds.
That was right after Buffalo.
Yes.
We had done a number of laws prior to the Supreme Court ruling in response to the Buffalo shooting. And you speak of, you know, the sale of assault weapons, increasing the age, you know, for those who are eligible. We did that, you know, making sure that, you know, you can't just walk into a store and purchase body armor. You know, you have to have, you know, age for that as well. So there were some steps tightening up our red flag laws to make sure that, you know, if in fact people are mindful of an individual who's a threat to themselves or to their community, we need to make sure that once that person is identified, those responsible for following through, in fact, follow through, because otherwise the law on the books is just that. It's just on the books. We need people to actually effectuate the laws if they're going to have any effect. And so I think, you know, what we did with the red flag law was try to improve its effectiveness as opposed to just saying, here's what it is on the books.
Yeah. And maybe you would want to consider committing, getting a law enforcement group that's dedicated to knocking on the doors of anybody who makes excessive purchases of firearms, body armor, ammunition, just a call to say, hey, we know you bought this. What's going on?
It's important more than anything that when people are using platforms like social media platforms, especially our young kids, because we're seeing a lot of this coming from our young people, you know, how they engage in the classroom, what they might write or share. You know, I think that's when we need to just be very mindful. Our parents need to be a lot more mindful, our neighbors, our communities, our mentors, that when we're seeing kids who might be struggling, especially mentally with different challenges, and they're expressing themselves in a way that suggests that violence could be an answer for them. We can't turn a blind eye to that. You know, we can't act like, oh, you know, hope it doesn't happen. You know, we all have to share in the responsibility for looking out for each other. And that to me is the first step. It's just making sure that parenting, you know, is elevated, that our community involvement and investment is elevated, because ultimately we should be in a position where if guns are as accessible as they are, we do everything in our power to make sure that who accesses those weapons, they are of sound mind. They are not of the mindset to cause harm to others. And it's incumbent upon us to be able to use our technology, to use the laws that we have, to be able to track these individuals that in essence almost rings the alarm and says, hey, this is crossed over a certain threshold here where we need to make sure that this young person who is accumulating weapons, who's saying X, Y, and Z on their Facebook page or their social media page, who's submitting a book report that says X, Y, and Z, at a certain point, we need to be able to check in on that, intervene, and say, hey, what's going on here? And right now, we don't both set up a system designed for that. We have set it up, and I think we're going in the right direction. But it's also incumbent upon us in terms of our own personal commitment to do that work.
Since your first run for public office, you've always been a strong ally of labor. You said that earlier. For those who don't know, can you talk to us about some of your past work with labor and how you plan on continuing this work as Lieutenant Governor?
Yes. Like I said, I come from a working family. I understand the role of labor and how important it has been to increasing wages, to providing for benefits, healthcare, the ability for our labor force to negotiate, their labor agreements and guarantee themselves, quality of life is absolutely imperative. So whether it's the PRO Act, which I was a big proponent of and I was in Congress, which would push back against right-to-work laws, which are designed to gut the ability of labor to organize, or whether it's making sure that we address labor busting practices and make it more of a penalty against those actors who have it in their mindset to undermine labor. These are the things that I've been championing for the last 5 years as a public servant in Congress and now as Lieutenant Governor. And then another point I'll make is we need to make sure that when we invest in infrastructure and we have these contracts for roads and bridges and, you know, buildings, that our project labor agreements, you know, are certainly attached, to these projects so that we can guarantee good wages, prevailing wages, right, to, our labor force. We have to have good paying jobs that are based in New York that allow our workers in New York to put food on their table and take care of their kids. That's the equation in my book. That's the baseline. And so labor is very, very important in making sure that we establish that baseline.
Thank you. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. We're going to invite you to come back on Reaching Out because there's so much more to talk to you about. And we know you have so much more to talk to us about. And it was a pleasure having you on. We a very special guest, Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.